What if I told you you could be anywhere you want to be in just 3 years? It's true. By staying hyper-focused on your goals and purpose, you can make your vision a reality in just a few short years or even sooner. The trick is, you have to build the routine that will support you in getting there. The good news, we've already done the hard part for you. We created a free 5-minute morning routine tailored specifically to you. It's delivered straight to your inbox each morning, is designed to help you supercharge your mornings with clarity, focus, and inspiration. By committing to this 5-minute routine daily, you'll create total clarity on your purpose and goals, inspiration to help you build a lasting habit, and the life that you want in just 3 years. The best part, this tool is totally free. No strings attached, just valuable resources to help your inner and outer growth. So if you're looking for a short, easy morning routine that will help you, one, stay laser focused on your vision you have for your life, and two, help you make progress towards that vision every single day, head to adamhergenrother.com/future or visit the link in the show notes to create your future self today. Everybody, I'm Adam Hergenrother. This is Business Meets Spirituality. We believe in personal growth through business success. I am joined by my chief staff, Holly Warner, and we are on part 4 of Consciousness at Work. We have covered a lot. Super excited to be with you guys today. We are going to be covering conscious leadership. So the first question I'm going to answer, and then we're going to move into some actual tactical examples of these things. Because people always ask, like even yesterday we were teaching, an expansion mastermind course, but the question came down is like, what's like the number one thing that helps you kind of stay stable and core? They want
to
know
They wanted to know the one most critical item that helped in the success of building the business.
Yeah. And when I said TM, I actually thought that question was different, but I think transcendental meditation, because it gave you the clarity to be centered, to make the right decisions for the business. Mm-hmm. And Ray Dalio actually says the same thing, so if you don't want to take my advice, I would take Ray Dalio, who is just one of the most incredible human beings.
And that's like that higher level answer too, because I was going to say, it was hiring the right people. It was, really like super tactical.
But those are all branches of the tree. The thing is that you think about it is like, I think about when people ask that question, I go, first you have to have the tree, which is the centerness. The center, the tree is centered and rooted in the ground. Then you have all these branches. Then you have the needles. Then you have like little pieces of the needles.
So like the roots are transcendental meditation.
Yeah, the roots, the stem, kind of like what's grounded into it is TM or some sort of meditation. It doesn't have to be TM. For me, it was, and for Ray Dalio, it was. So that's the centerness to be able to make all of the decisions accurately in business. Also things like what to learn and what to study show up differently when you're clear in sense. So it gives you that perspective to be able to use into the business world.
So what does conscious leadership mean?
Yeah. So conscious leadership is the same variation of all three other parts. All four parts are about this and exactly what the kind of answering with the TM, which conscious leadership is, I am aware that I'm in here, that I do not need to listen to the story or the mind narrate life for me, and I'm able to stay centered and collect myself. Everyone kind of knows what collect yourself means. Maybe you can't put it into words, but I'm able to stay centered when I'm making decisions, period. I actually heard Eckhart Tolle say this morning, I happened to be listening to one of the things he was saying, and he said, if somebody asked me on a resume, which I thought, because I don't hear him actually talk about business very often, he goes, mm-hmm. If I had to fill out a resume and they asked me what my skills were, he said, my skills would be that I no longer have to think. That's literally what his skills.
Okay, but what does that mean?
Well, it means that like I'm no longer listening to my mind think.
He's just present,
conscious
and acting.
Yes, exactly.
From that place of presence and consciousness.
Yes, exactly. And so it doesn't, and again, people hear that and they go, then I'm not going to accomplish anything.
Yeah.
And that's not what it is.
Why would I hire that person?
Well, the thing is it's not about, and again, we've talked about this, but it's not about not using your mind. There's a major difference. And you gave that example in session 3 about how like you're playing with your kids, like you're using your mind to be creative, or the mind's going, how come you're doing this? How long are you going to do this for? You have other things to be doing. And then people buy into that voice. So consciousness just means I'm waking up and I realize that there's this little annoying voice in my head and that's not me. And I'm not going to listen to that. Actually, funny, I was talking to my son last night and he went through, he was a little dramatic yesterday. And so we had a talk and so he just grabbed my hand and he was holding me before he was sleeping. And I said, a random question came up. I said, hey, what's that little voice in your head saying right now? He goes, well, it's copying you. Mm. And I was like, oh, what a sweet, innocent answer, but truth. He was like, it's just copying you. It's saying what you're saying, Dad. But he was totally real.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, that's not you, right? He goes, I know. And I know it's not, but it was just copying you. And I was like, man, what a real answer. But that's consciousness. That's being like, he saw that the voice is there and he was able to recognize that there was a voice just trying to copy me.
And that there was a separation.
And there's a separation between the two. Yeah,
that's awesome.
I mean, that is at the essence of what conscious leadership means. You can't explain consciousness in words. The only thing that we're doing here is trying to give some sort of direction so that people can experience it themselves.
Right. Or to me, I always like to be able to maybe recognize it or be more aware of when it happens, when I get all of these examples, and when I know we can't actually define it, but it gives me direction.
Yes.
So that when it does happen, I'm like, oh, that's what's going on.
Yeah. It's just an awareness. Mm-hmm. It's really, if you want to get deeper on this, because people in this session are, if you've made it to session four, you're tracking with us. It's consciousness is really, consciousness comes into it. It manifests as you through life, right? It manifests into each one of us, you, Hallie, into me, right? And there's the human part of us, the personality, all the mind, all the emotions, all that stuff. That's the human part. Then there's the being part, which is consciousness, which it manifests in it. And the evolution of being conscious is when consciousness, the manifestation of consciousness, recognizes that it's consciousness. Do you get that?
Nope.
Well,
not
like,
really.
Because consciousness in itself is manifested from the same source. It's all part, like a wave manifests from the ocean. We say, oh, there's a wave, but it's still part of the ocean.
Right.
So we could say, oh, there's a human, there's Hallie, but Hallie's still part of consciousness, right? You're still that dwelling, that awareness that you're in there is all tapped into and part of the greater part of consciousness.
Universal
life, exactly. Whatever you want to refer to that, divine, however you want to refer to that is. So it's, you've just, in every plant, every animal, plant, anything is just a manifestation, right? It's consciousness kind of experiencing itself. So when you get past the mind, consciousness starts to go, oh, I don't have to listen to that mind. Then it starts to turn around and starts to recognize that it's aware of itself. And that's when people start to use the word enlightenment and different things like that, because you're actually aware that you're aware. And really what that's meaning is that you're just aware of yourself. So conscious becomes aware of itself through the manifestation of itself.
So how do you how do you practice that concept, that conscious leadership every day, like in the workplace?
Well, I think the thing to do is, so what I was actually going with this until you distracted me or until I went off on a tangent.
But maybe that was your mind though.
Yeah. Well, actually I wasn't using my mind. It was just things that were just showing up and I was just talking. The thing that, the thing that people want to know is like, I'm on the ground, I'm in work, I'm making decisions. What do I do? Right. So so you had a good question. Like, so how does it show up at work? Right. Mm-hmm. Is that really what it is?
Well, I mean, I think it kind of goes back to what we were talking about in the beginning first about the roots. And we were talking about transcendental meditation and in order to be a conscious leader, you first have to lead yourself,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so how, you know, so talk to me more about that.
Yeah. So I think the key is there's multiple things. Number one is self-leadership, right? So, and self-awareness is another word you could use for self-leadership. So what is your practice every day to bring you to a place to gain more self-awareness? And if that word resonates better with people, you can use that. Or you can use to have more personal growth, right? Mm-hmm. Or to have more consciousness or have more spirituality, whatever you want to refer to that is that you have to have a practice for it. And it can be as simple, by the way. We talked about this before, is you have to essentially meet people where they are. So in the beginning, like when you first practice in this may be a vision board. Like that's the first technique that they can do. Remember, techniques are wonderful. They get you going down the path to get you to experience what you're trying to experience. So the technique in the beginning may be a vision board, but your self-leadership is going to come from your daily practice. So that can be a vision board, that can be a gratitude journal, that can be a meditation, that can be a walk, that could just be every minute of every day just trying to pay attention that there's this voice inside your head doing this. That's all self-growth. That's all self-leadership. But most important, that's why you see the people that are developing and growing are people who have very, I don't even like the word like strict, I can just more routine practices every day to work on themselves. And that's really what it comes down to. So that personal growth, that working on yourself is giving you strength to continue to look and go more self-inquiry. Because I think most people on this call have done sort of maybe a behavioral test or assessment, or have started learning about themselves more. And as you learn about yourselves more, you go, oh, I didn't realize I acted that way. I can even going back way back in the beginning in 2008, I went to a first DISC class, D-I-S-C. Mm-hmm. And I think I've told this story before where I literally was in the class and I was actually next to my wife, Sarah. And I was like, and somebody's like, oh yeah, D's are high drivers. They're intense. They're all these different things. And they're kind of going off. And I'm like, yeah, that's definitely me. And I'm like, so isn't everyone else. And then all of a sudden they got to like a C or an S. And Sarah's like, I'm an S.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? You don't think like that? And it was such an aha moment for me. And that's all personal growth is too. It was just all of a sudden I became more self-aware of who I was. Mm-hmm. Now that I was self-aware on more on the personality, human side. But then fast forward, 15 years, you start going more inward. So being a conscious leader.
But that's
leader,
a great place to start.
Yes. Being a conscious leader means that I need to start somewhere and I need to bring some sort of game into my life, not an actual game of like self-discipline in my life to become more self-aware.
Yeah. And again, great place to start, because when you do that and you start leading yourself first, you are then going to attract the right people to be in your world from that more authentic and egoless place.
Yeah.
As a leader, right? Yeah. I mean, that's part of what we do as leaders is, recruit people, hire, mm-hmm. fire.
Well, leaders, I mean, I would say that almost, it's maybe not the hourly component of it, but the most important thing a leader needs to do is to hire the right people.
Yeah. So how can they do that from a conscious place?
Well, the more you are more self-aware, the more, and because here's the thing, people that are further along in self-awareness are willing to go out and hire people better than them. You just want to hear it that way, right? Mm-hmm. They are, because somebody that's not self-aware or has more egoic level of consciousness in them is always that person who's never going to allow somebody else to be better than them. They're going to hold on to parts of their job.
Right. Because they don't feel less significant valuable
or they don't want to be scared. On. Yes, exactly. And then those are people who, when they're doing reviews, or like somebody could be knocking out of the park but they don't give them all the best reviews. So somebody else doesn't see it and think they're better than them. Mm-hmm. And so we all know those managers or leaders that show up that way, right? Or employees can do this. They're like, don't want to give up part of something because they're afraid that somebody's going to take something away from them. Right. So there's different modes of that, but that's how it can show up in the leadership world.
So let's just talk about interviews specifically. So when you're going into an interview, how can you do that from a more conscious place?
Yes. So I think the way you start this, again, this is a technique, is that when you're going in there and if somebody is really, really awesome in the interview or whatever level stage that means for you, and you start to feel inadequate next to the person and the person maybe starts to go, or you're sitting in there going like, if this person came on, like I wouldn't have a job. Mm-hmm. That's when it's a great opportunity to go, this is, first of all, a person I need to be in a relationship with. And also this is a great place for me to let go of this feeling right now. And so that's how you can start becoming more aware.
Yeah. I was going to say that was actually one of my first,
I remember that.
Yeah. My first indications of, well, I don't even really know what you would call that, but to me it was
self-awareness.
It was self-awareness. And it was also like when I really started to understand what talent looked like, was when I felt that overwhelming feeling of I'm going to lose my job and I'm not in insignificance. I was like, thankfully that we talked through it, right? And I realized that that's actually the person that we needed to hire.
Yes, exactly.
And I got over it.
Yes. Well, and you did a great job of that, but there is that whole element when people are sitting in a room and they go for a hire and they're like, oh man, like they're instantly, their mind either goes, I can't afford this person. I can't be in a relationship with this person. They're better than me. There's a whole bunch of reasons why they don't end up hiring that person, mm-hmm. right? Instead of being conscious and going, maybe I can be in business with them. Maybe I can't, I don't know yet, but I'm certainly going to let go of the part of me that has fear around hiring them.
Yeah.
That's what you let go of. Then you may or may not be in a relationship.
Right.
We don't know the outcome, but don't always respond instantly and go, I can't afford this person. They're better than me. And, or I have fear around hiring somebody because I won't have a job.
Yeah. We also talk about always making sure, and this is again, stuff we've talked about before, but staying super neutral in those interviews for that reason that you can either get really bought into the hire, mm-hmm. One way or the other. You might immediately like not mm-hmm. like something they said and then discount that they could be amazing for the organization or overlook that they are not the right fit just because you have a bunch of things in common.
Yeah.
So doing all of this self-leadership practice to maintain that neutrality going into the interview is super important.
Yes. I love that.
To make the best decisions for the organization. Yeah.
Again, all the same variation.
Yeah.
Get clear, as clear as you possibly can. And then whatever part of you, whatever you're doing in your leading world, that could be leading a group, it could be an interview, that could be in firing, which we can talk about in a second, right? Any one of those things, the first thing to always do is go, is there a part of me that's preventing me from being as clear as I can? That's the easiest way to say, like, being more conscious is what is. Is there a part of me that I'm listening to, or part of me that's fearful or afraid or inauthentic, that's blocking me from being truthful in the situation that I'm about to lead into?
How does that apply to firing somebody or laying them off? Or,
well, I think it actually applies to before people are actually fired.
Okay.
Because I think what I've seen in most businesses, real estate, outside of real estate, whenever you talk with individuals, most companies stay where they are, plus or minus 10% based on how their market conditions are going, only because of the people that they keep. Typically, the first people you hire, they may be part of your organization, but they're typically probably not all the leadership positions that you need in an organization. In fact, you may at some point need to go hire more people that are above them, and that becomes a tricky situation in leadership to deal with that, right? Mm-hmm. So you get faced with this decision that nobody else wants to make, by the way. Because when I sit down with people, I'm going, well, what do you need to do in order to move your sales forward or in order to move your organization forward? And they're like, well, you know, I'm missing this process or this system. And ultimately they say these different hosts of excuses, and I go, and it always comes back to, they don't have the right people. Just summarize it to there.
Yeah. And you know, one question that's, I don't know if this is relevant or not, but one question I always ask when we're working through this with clients or in coaching or whatever is, they get so attached to the person often, and like, well, maybe if we moved this person over there, or maybe if we took this off of their plate and then we did this instead. But I always just ask the question, and you, I'm sure you do too, which is, what does the business need?
Yeah.
And what position does the business need right where you are at now, currently, as the organization stands? And then you decide if that person is the right fit for it, not the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you're making a tremendous amount of money and you want to keep extra people around because they're loyal and they've been there for a while, that's your choice.
Sure.
That's I heard somebody say that one time. They're like, I'm making so much money that I'm choosing to have some of these people around. However, let me be very clear that if everything got tight, they'd be the first people to go. Mm. That's what literally was their comments. And I said, well, that's a good way of saying it. So if you have ample cash flow and you can easily afford to have some people around that have been there for a while and you like it, that's a luxury and that's wonderful. That's not most businesses though.
Right.
So in most businesses, the reason why I said it comes before actually firing somebody is you having to be clear enough to be able to ask the question that Hallie just proposed, right? If I was coming in as a board member, let's kind of always put myself in a seat. If I'm going to, even my own company, as I go, if I was coming in with no attachment to the outcome,
yeah,
what decision would I be making?
Yeah.
And then that's how I always approach the decisions. And the decision is that, you know, Samantha over here, I don't know Samantha, but like, you know, Samantha over here is not the right person based on where the organization is right now. So maybe the organization's changed. And so instead of trying to move Samantha into some other position because you feel bad for her, that may not even be the right position for her. You have to then make the conscious decision of saying, sit down and say, the organization's moving this way. And unfortunately, we're eliminating this position. Mm-hmm. And before you go in there, of course, you know, there's the mechanics of firing. You should talk to HR and all that stuff before you do any of those things. But before you, most people are unwilling to make these tough decisions around hiring people that are really good, right? Because it goes both ways.
Yes.
Hiring people. And I also talk about, you've got to be willing to jump brackets and pay. Like I always say, think about the most successful money, successful, because that's how a lot of people see it. Successful people in business in terms of money. And I go, great. How much do you think the people that are next to them are making? And they're like 500,000, a million or $2 million. Say, great. What's the people next to you? Right? Are they at 30,000, 50,000, 100,000? Right? Where are they? Because at some level, you're gonna have to keep jumping brackets. Right? And what I see most people, and they're trying to get in this $30,000 to $50,000 range, but they're trying to extract $100,000 person from a $30,000 salary. And so you have to kind of jump these brackets in order to get the next outcome that you're looking for. It's like, it's so easy to see this in baseball or sports in general, because when people get traded from sports, they don't see it as somebody getting fired. It's almost like customary. Well, what's the difference? Baseball or football is a sport and it's a business,
right?
It's not a nonprofit. It's a business. And so you're running a business. So when Tom Brady gets traded, right, people may be upset that he's traded, but they're not going like, oh, how could the, you know, I can't believe the coach would not think about his feelings and his emotions. That was the best move for the company. And that's how you have to operate these things. The only way you can do that though, is from you letting go of the fear of unwilling to make a tough leadership decision, the fear of what's going to happen, the fear of actually sitting down and actually having the conversation with people, the fear of the outcome. That's why you have to let go of the outcome. Mm-hmm. You have to let go of needing to be right. You're not firing somebody also because you don't like them. That's the other thing. You don't just fire somebody because they're not, maybe somebody's just crushing it and doing really good and you may not get along with them. Then you need to figure out whether or not you're the best person to serve them, or what is it with you that they're getting bothered by? And so there's a whole element to this, but the only way you're going to really truly figure all that out is if you're willing to let go of the personal side of you.
Yeah. I was going to just say, sometimes you say, that you let go of the personal energy behind some of these decisions, but what does that exactly mean? Letting go of, or not having any personal energy behind a conversation or behind a decision?
Yeah. I mean, let me just try to give an example of this, because I've said it throughout these four series, is if you look at a tree outside right now, is there any energy when you look at that tree? Like, are you like, I can't believe that tree would look like that. I can't believe it would be there.
No, but you might go, oh, wow, that tree is really gorgeous.
Yes.
That one looks like it's dying.
And that's the personal. That's the personal.
Because I'm making a judgment?
Yes. And that's exactly what you let go of.
Okay.
Because you who's in there, you who's in there didn't say that. The mind did. The mind's the only one that told you that, whether you liked it or disliked it. And that's all based on your experiences, your likes, your dislikes, and your preferences. That's why the cause of all suffering is based on preferences. And so that's the mind. That's what you let go of.
So if you're just conscious.
Yes. There is no story.
It's just, I'm just looking.
You're actually experiencing. And you're seeing the tree for what it is, a tree. There's no label on it. That's why language can judge things. Label is helpful, helps us get around in the world. But we've all become so intoxicated with language that's all we're looking at. Remember we talked about last time when the world is out here, and then there's the world, the mind, then you. Mm-hmm. That's why when I ask people, like if everyone just, I ask my kids all the time, like make your mind say apple. And they're like, it's saying it. So it's you, then you see the apple, then there's world. So that's why we get caught in this box where it's like the world comes in and hits the mind first, because that's what everyone's looking at. You're actually looking at your mind, then the mind is taking in the world. And so the mind is actually just narrating the world
and interpreting it.
And interpreting it, yeah. It based on how your life's unfolded.
And past experiences.
That's all of it. Yes. How your life's unfolded, including past experiences, your culture that you grew up in.
Preferences, societal norms.
Yes. The family, the teachers, all of that stuff.
The stuff you read, the stuff you watch.
Yeah. Instead of the mind going to the side and you looking directly at the tree. That's why in Buddha, they say, when you've hitched enlightenment, it's when you can just say, I see the tree. That's why the whole story is that guy is like, every day I've been walking out for the guy in the Buddha, and the Buddha was teaching one of his disciples, and the guy was walked in. He's like, I see it. I finally see it. It's just a tree. And the tree has been there the whole time. That's why it's real famous. He says just tree. Because he finally walked in one day and was like, it's just a tree. And that's when people know, like, you've got it. And so what you let go of when you're walking in there is not you thinking through how the conversation can go, not you thinking through what you need to prepare for, not you thinking through of having things in writing, not you thinking through maybe certain words you can use. That's fine, because that's you using your mind in the situation that you're in. Mm-hmm. So don't get confused with that. It's you coming in there, then the mind narrating first. That's the slightest difference between all of this. Is it you using the mind, or is the mind using you, and then you're taking orders from the mind? And so when you let go, you're letting go of the mind giving you orders, and it switches. That's why it's called transcendence, because what you're transcending is the mind. And the mind is the egoic level of consciousness. So when people are operating from ego, what they're operating from is they're operating from the mind only. Mm-hmm. And so when you let go of the mind, you become clear and you become conscious,
and
because
the mind
there is no story.
Is just a tool.
And just a tool.
It's just like my iPhone.
Exactly.
I can just take it out when I want to use it.
Perfect.
When I don't, I can put it on airplane mode.
Exactly.
Okay.
Or a car or a hammer. It's just a tool.
So if we've got team members who we can see may benefit from some of these conversations, or employees who might benefit from these conversations, how do you, as a leader, help? How do we share this with people who we know could benefit from these conversations and these concepts?
Yeah, the greatest gift you can give is to continue to work on your own awakening. i.e. I'll define that, but really all that means is that you model your behavior and you lead by example. Now, what does that really mean? That means that you can, in tactical form, you could be reading a good book. And if maybe you're an employee and your employer is not quite at your level, right? There's a lot of them that are not. Maybe you could let them know that you're reading this cool new book and that, you know, hey, I thought maybe you would enjoy this.
Can we break it down into two different sections? Let's talk first about the leader working through, I mean, like we do one-on-ones with our employees all the time. Mm-hmm. So we have, and a lot of other accountability measures. So we have a lot of insight into our employees and how they operate, what are their strengths, weaknesses, where they can grow. How would a leader help one of those individuals where they have that sort of direct reporting relationship? And I do think you have a good example of the how you had a great conversation with a team member about job versus leadership at one point.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tactic and something that you can employ, but I think, and I'll share that in a second, but part of that is you have to model that. So as you're leading that employee,
right,
you have to be working on yourself. You have to be leading that. Then what you can do is you can say, hey, here's a book, here's a podcast that I was listening to. Here's this 4-part series that you can share with somebody else because starts bringing them awareness and then let them kind of, here's the key to all this is you have to meet them where they are. Right? Mm-hmm. Like you have to meet them where they are. Because the minute you start realizing where they are, you can bring them the level of technique that they need that's going to get them further along in their path. For instance, you don't go to a kindergartner and give them, you know, calculus. You give them like, start learning to count 1 to 10. And that's their technique. But once they master that, then they go, here's addition. Here's multiplication, right? So you, each part of along the way, you meet the student, if you will, because if you're leading somebody, mm-hmm, forget about the hierarchy of an organization. If you're helping lead somebody, you have to meet the student wherever they are.
And I think you mentioned this actually before that sometimes either you, and I think I do this too, will ask questions to try to figure out exactly maybe where mm-hmm that specific resistance is for them.
Yes.
It could be in their personal life. It could be in their work life, wherever it is, because until you actually know what that is, it might be hard to give a specific technique.
Yes.
But giving them something to work on is often helpful.
Yes. Yeah.
Something specific.
Yes, exactly. Just like you're in school, you keep getting more and more future techniques.
Yeah.
It's called learning.
Right.
And that's all this is. It's like you're learning, you're just meeting the person, the student where they are, but you're learning life. That's why we even called it business meets spirituality, because if we just went out and did a straight spirituality talk without kind of bringing these things in there, I'm not meeting the business community where they are. And then it's just, there's different things. So the way I really wanted to bring this into the world was meeting business owners and individuals and employees who love creating in this craft that we call business, meeting where they are to further them along.
Well, I did a survey recently to our Force Multiplier community. And one of the biggest things that came back was that there was a lack of visibility into the role and a lack of respect for these executive support roles and maybe a little bit of, unconsciousness from their leadership. So how would somebody in that position where it's not necessarily a direct report, it's not a student, they're actually trying to share this information with, they're trying to lead up.
Yeah.
How would somebody approach that?
Yeah. I mean, that's a wonderful question. And the first thing that you can do is just, you need to work on you and everything else will take care of itself. Now, that's not a dodging the answer.
Yeah.
If you become clear as an executive assistant, you're either going to earn a seat at the table. You're going to, somebody else in the organization is going to look at you and notice what you're doing and the contribution that you're having. And it's going to move you into a different role, or you're going to have maybe a new offer or a new opportunity that's going to show up. But in the end, what it'll always happen is you are always working. It's like the same adage is this, like if you're in a relationship that's not good, you don't change the relationship, right? What do you change?
Yourself.
You. So that you're prepared to be in the next situation. So if you're in a relationship with a boss that isn't treating you the same way, and I understand you may not be able to just mechanically go out there and fire yourself tomorrow because, unless it's an abusive relationship, that's completely different, but like you can't fire yourself tomorrow because you need money, right? You need those things. So what you do is you can accept where you are first and foremost. You can always accept, that's the first modality to self-awareness, is you can always accept the situation. So I have a boss who's not nearly as conscious as I am, and that's okay. I'm going to accept it. Every time it bothers me that he's not where he is and he doesn't respect me, I'm going to let that go. That's your work. Then as you do that, you will climb purely because that's what you're doing. And so that's the first place. You don't go fight that. You don't resist that because for somebody else being unconscious and bothering you, that's on you, by the way. Mm-hmm. Purely hands down. People don't want to hear that, but that's on you. So the first thing you do is just like I said, in the example in the relationship, you change, you start changing you. Then you can take action.
Yeah. And I was just going to add that we all know that you can't change somebody else, mm-hmm. but you can influence other people to change their behavior. I think leadership is influence.
Absolutely.
And so if we have executive assistants, chiefs of staff, force multipliers, leading themselves first, like you just said, and showing up every day as the best version, the best conscious version of themselves, it may actually, the positive part might be that they may actually start influencing their leader to start making positive changes in their leadership.
Right. That's exactly right.
And then that's the best case scenario, right? And then yes, there's going to be the alternatives where you may get noticed from somebody else. You're going to increase your own leadership lid and confidence, and there might be other opportunities for you. Or you may eventually end up outgrowing your leader, and that's fine too. And then you just, you got to make a move.
Either way, you accept and work on yourself, and the outcome will take care of itself. The right opportunity will show up. And just like you said, you walk through the examples of what's going to happen, right? The thing too, is that I found is, and I want people to think about it in this terms, when your leader or employer is not treating you consciously, right? And not doing that, you having any energy negatively around that is actually fueling them to act that way.
Even if it's like subconscious?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, your emotional feeling of love, can you see it?
No.
So you can't see any of that. It's at a different wavelength that we can see.
Right. But you can feel energy. Yeah, absolutely.
So when your employer and you're showing up there with no resistance to that, they have nothing to fight you on. Mm. So now you're showing up consciously.
Mm, yeah.
And now you're sitting there and they could be as unconscious as they want, but they're going to stop being unconscious with you at some point because they're not, it's almost like a bully. A bully stops picking on somebody when they know it's not affecting them, but it can't be a fake not affecting them. It's got to be a real, like, bring it. Like, yes, that hurts. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, there's no more fighting. It's like if you're in the middle of a fight with your partner, like your marital partner or your dating partner, and all of a sudden you just had no energy and you just hugged the person, their person's not going to fight you anymore. You may or may not stay together. They're just not going to fight you anymore. The only reason why fights exist,
It's resistance.
And that's all that stress is.
Even if it's just the resistance and energy.
That is stress.
Well, I know. I'm just thinking, like, I always think of resistance, like maybe it's a verbal resistance or it's the energy resistance.
The verbal resistance is only a manifestation of the inner resistance.
Sure.
You don't come out verbally resisting something if you're not inwardly feeling it.
Right.
So that's where it starts. And that's all a consciousness. The minute that energy shifts to a defensive position and you start feeling that energy getting riled up from this person, that is you resisting. There's something that's basically saying there's something wrong in here with me. That's on me. It's got nothing to do with anybody else. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to go, okay, I'm going to stay in this situation. I'm not saying that. What it just means now is that now you taking the highest path in this moment, which will then lead you to changing your boss, changing the person that's in front of you. Maybe they wake up and say, thank you someday.
Yeah.
Changing the relationship that you're in.
But you're making those changes from a different state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Spirituality or consciousness is not about changing what you do. It's about changing the part of you that's doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's period. That's it. And so that's how you start working through those things. It's first you need to let go. We just gave that example a lot of letting go of that personal feeling that's there that is now resisting life. Cause that's where stress comes from. Stress is the resistance. Like if you think about like a weightlifter, stress comes from you lifting weights and it breaks down your muscles and rebuilds it. Stress in your life comes from you resisting something that's happening in life.
Yes. Resisting what is.
Exactly. So that's why the first modality is always acceptance. You may not like it. You may not want to stay in there. You may not like anything, but you can always, you can always use example. If you're lying in your deathbed, nobody's going to like that. But you can always accept it.
You can't change from that place of resistance, can you?
Well, you have to accept first before you can change. Purity of change.
Okay.
You can change something, but you're going to be acting from the lowest part of you when you're acting from resistance or that emotion that comes from resistance.
Right. Or it's those changes that don't actually.
Because you can actually go through the mechanics of change acting from there.
Right, right.
But it's not going to be the highest use of your time. That's the whole point of consciousness at work.
Right. Or it's not going to be a long lasting change.
Exactly. Or it's just like, you know, you, whatever you're doing, you're end up going to get, you're going to get caught in something and you're going to change to go move to California because that's going to make it all better. And you go there and 6 months later, now you got to go make another change. This time it's in your relationship, right? So you just keep constantly trying to change something to change the problem
to fix
the problem that's in you. And so that's why it always goes back to the same variation of all of this is let you surrender or acceptance or let go, whatever word makes sense for you, to what you're resisting. Then you act. Like I always respond to this in emails because I know in business people, I'm like, let go and then fight like hell. Like I say that to people because it's like they need to hear, but you got to let go first and then you fight.
Yeah.
I don't mean physically fight. I just mean that you just take action, but you're doing it from the highest source at that point. And that's what it is. And that's consciousness at work in general. It's all of that. And that's actually all of life, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's always not resisting what is. Because it's just unfolding. I just don't know how to say that differently for people to hear that. It's just literally just unfolding. And you're here just watching it unfold. But you go, hold on, I don't like that unfolding.
Yeah, what's the Eckhart Tolle thing that he says that it's just like the isness of life?
Yeah, that's all it is. It's like you're not peddling this thing around. You're a guest here.
Yeah.
You're just a guest here.
But we take ourselves so seriously though.
That the ego takes yourself so seriously. Yeah. So break it up into two different pieces. There's the human and there's the being. Most people never in every life never really get past the human part. They don't even know aware that there's a being. Well, the being's always there because it's always conscious. You've covered it up. And that's why the whole term awakening comes in. People don't really fully understand what awakening means. Awakening just means that you transcend the actual human part of this world. Doesn't mean you can't interact as a human. Doesn't mean you can't interact with words and language like we're doing now or using your mind to say, that is a tree. You're literally just, you've transcended the human part, the egoic level of consciousness. Now you're more conscious. The more conscious you are because you're not tapping into the mind. You're tapping into the source of you. And there's nothing higher than that. I think last time we gave the example of like digging a ditch of size of Texas with a shovel versus like a million, you know, excavators. Mm-hmm. You're tapping into something so much greater. But the death of that ego, letting go of that ego, is what Jesus said. You have to die to be reborn. And St. Paul said, I die daily. And that's literally what is you're dying to the self-concept that you've created, which is the egoic level, so that you can move away from that and actually lead from consciousness. And that's at the deepest level of consciousness at work. Now there's every level, right? I mean, we can go back to consciousness at work can also mean I just started a vision board. I just started doing my five daily questions. Those are all techniques, all the way up to you sitting in a meeting when somebody's giving you feedback and you're feeling very defensive to letting that energy go. And then those are all techniques. And then techniques are just designed to get you to experience something. It's like techniques are, you know, you give your kid an iPad, you know, on a plane so they stay consumed and on the plane so they don't get off until you get to your destination, which is what I first said in the beginning of this, which is where the whole point of you being here in this life, by the way, is so that consciousness can realize itself.
So a couple of, was that a year ago? A year ago, we were looking for some new leadership positions at our company. And so we posted a new job ad for a C-suite leadership position. And then we had an employee email you, I think, Adam.
Yeah.
That
and had a conversation with you too.
Oh yes, and he came in and talked
to
me.
Kind of like a heated one.
Yes, he was a little bit upset that we hadn't considered him for the role.
Yes.
And I think I had thought about him for the role, and I'm sure you did too. Yeah. And we had dismissed it, but he had wanted us to at least have talked to him about it, which was lesson learned. We have adjusted that.
Lesson learned.
But and so my energy was also like, what is going on?
Like, it wasn't just like, hey, how come I wasn't considered for the role? There was a lot more energy behind it, very egoic energy around the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so when I first got the email that, I think it was like a Monday night I got it and I almost wanted to respond it, but I was going to be responding from the lower self because I wasn't centered.
It was actually like a Thursday or Friday because I think you took the weekend and
It was a Thursday or Friday. And then it wasn't until Monday that I actually responded.
Yes.
Even though I actually drafted an email, deleted it, started drafting on Saturday morning, deleted it. I said, I'm just going to wait till Monday. It can wait. And so finally on Monday, all I actually sent an email and said, hey, I would like to actually get together with you.
Right.
That's what I said. Because I'm like, this is not an email correspondence. And so what I sat down with the individual and I said, hey, and this, by the way, came, I didn't like think this up. I didn't read it in Inc. magazine. Like literally that Monday when I was driving in, I was like, oh, I know how I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like my mind didn't create a story around how I was going to do it. It just came. And it just said, I just saw it so clearly that he's really good at his job, but he's not good in leadership. Mm-hmm. So I said, I need to bifurcate it so he can understand that he's doing his job well, but not leadership well.
And so he can hear the more difficult conversation by not being concerned about that his job was in jeopardy.
Yes. Or that he wasn't doing a good job. Because that's what he kept saying. It's like, I'm doing this. I'm like, yeah. So basically I sat down to them. I said, hey, I'm just going to start this conversation by kind of laying out two fundamental different things here. There's job and then there's leadership. There's an ability for an employee to do their job and do it very well. And then there's leadership, which is influencing other people, leading other people, bringing really good ideas to the table, being open, radical transparency, radical conversations,
accountable,
all those things. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of labeled them both. And I said, I'm going to give you a scale, because the numbers guys, I'm going to give you a scale of 0 to 10 on your job. You're probably an 8 or 9. I said, so that's a check mark. You're doing a wonderful job in your job. This conversation has nothing to do about your performance as it relates to a job. However, when I bring you over to the actual leadership category, you're about a 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And this position required a lot of leadership. And so it's not that we can't get you to higher levels of leadership, but understand your job is a check mark. You haven't put energy or wanted to put energy on your leadership skills, which is what we just talked about, influence, all those things, right? And he actually took it very well, started reading books, started getting more engaged with different things, and still working on those things.
Yes.
Right. And he, you know, people are going to be in different phases in different lives. So who knows where that will end up going, but that was, it was able for me to be able to have the truthful conversation that needed to happen.
And you met him where he was at.
Yes.
In that conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I just separated the job versus leadership of just, you can do this a lot too when people are wanting a leadership role. So you can sit them down and saying, hey, I'm just going to give you a scale of 0 to 10, how you doing on your job. And let me give you a scale of 0 to 10 on your leadership and let's work together on your leadership. So I actually started meeting with him once a week or every couple of weeks, mm-hmm. to make sure like to go over books that we're reading, to do different things. And then you just want to see how people show up. Right?
Right.
Do they continue to show up? Do they ask questions?
Leaders do need to be self-motivated,
exactly.
Self-managed.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Self-leadership. They want to be growing those aspects, not just growing in your tactical job responsibilities, growing in leadership.
Yeah.
And so that's what we really separated it. And I actually ended up taking more time and kind of pouring into this person. So you can do the same thing with anybody on your team because I think that's a lot of question we get. It's like, hey, this person wants to be a leader, but they're not ready to be a leader.
Right.
Actually, I'm just thinking about like an example. That's probably a good example to use for.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah,
or they're like really like great salespeople. We see that a lot. It's great salespeople, but
that's
they
your
don't
job.
Right.
You're great
and
at sales.
And they're amazing at that, but they're not quite ready for the leadership component. Or and, honestly, vice versa. Sometimes
we
can have amazing leaders who are incredible influencers, but they actually struggle with getting work done.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like me. true.
Well, that's why your role is 100% leadership.
Well, it's hard. I actually get like paralysis when it comes to actually doing something. I go back to think about when I was like a sole person, like how did I do something? But you just had a different level. You're absolutely right. So that's why you just got to self-aware, know what's going on, and you can always break things down to do it. Now, if somebody isn't performing their job or leadership, that's a different conversation, but
absolutely.
That's how we kind of started there. But I thought we'd wrap up with kind of this 4-part consciousness series, which understanding a couple things, it's always going to come down to the same variations of what we're saying. Whenever you feel that you're start to suffer, your energy shifts to a different position, you start to feel irritated, anger, or some sort of low state, it can also be high, but typically it's probably going to be some sort of mood change, whatever you want to call to it. That's what you let go of. So consciousness, when you're meeting like awakening, enlightenment, all of those factors are only going to come from you letting go of the part of you that wants to be right, wants to be in control, that wants to know what's going on and wants life to be a certain way. It's the minute you realize that it's never going to be the way you want it. And yes, I get it. You can relatively get it the way you want it in certain parts of your life, especially with money and different things. But there are plenty of billionaires and millionaires, especially today, that have everything the way they want life to be and are miserable, just miserable. I mean, it's just, they are. And that's not, and there's also billionaires who are incredible. Mm-hmm. So it's not money. Money isn't the energy juice. It'll help. It's cool. And when you're already joyous and you have money, that's just a bonus. but it's not going to give you what you think it is. So you let go of that part and you always come back to acceptance. I'm going to accept something. Then you take the best action you can. And then if it's not the right action, you just accept that it wasn't the right action and you take the next action. But it's not fighting. It's not passive. Look, we're in a world now where our responsibility as leaders, as employees, as human beings, not just humans, human beings in this world, is to do whatever we can to wake up consciousness in itself and in you. And so in order to do that, we have to bring in every aspect of what we do. That is in our personal lives, in our business lives. And people that are listening to this are in business lives. It's our responsibility to be as conscious as we can in business. As consciousness shifts in business, it shifts your employees, it shifts your vendors, your clients. You just start interacting with the world completely differently. And now you're making your mark in such a powerful way because you're becoming conscious in itself. So as you start to do this, you start to let go of the piece of you that wants to control something, that won't accept what it is and starts to stress, you continue to let go. Now, however, I think that the next generation of leaders are just as committed to their inner growth and spiritual life as they are to spreadsheets and bottom lines. The other way of saying this is our kind of, if you will, in our world, it's 51% culture, 49% profit, meaning that their inner growth culture, personal growth, execution, model following falls, putting the company and organization first, including for me too, not putting me first, but me putting the company first and doing whatever I need to do, always trumps profit. However, profit's really close, but it doesn't tip the scales. And so make sure that profit is never tipping the scales for you. Even in situations where it's really tough and you may go, well, I don't have any profit right now, it still can't be the deciding factor because you could have all the money in the world and it's not going to give you what you're looking for. So when you're clear on that and you always put 51%, and you can pick whatever stat you are, that's just for us, you're always putting your own growth from the situation first and acceptance, the rest of it will come. It may not come the way you want it. It may come in a different form or different variation or take you down a different path, but it'll always come. And I think that Naval Ravikant, I think, summarized this very well. And I'm just going to end with this quote because while he admits he's not there and he's working on it every day, I love his quote because it talks a lot about what's written on my desk, which is need nothing, enjoy everything. In fact, one of the greatest lines I think ever written in spirituality is that the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. However, make the slightest distinction between the two and you'll set infinitely apart from heaven and hell. That's the first line. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. Mm-hmm. It's the first line of the Zen Patriarch. It's one of the deepest writings because, but make the slightest distinction and it's the difference between heaven and hell. If you have no preferences, you have no problems. That's it, period. Now it doesn't mean, this is where people get lost. Go pick your clothes, go pick your things. It's not that, right? So just remember that. And so it's when we start to let go of needing the world to be a certain way. So then this, I believe this kind of wraps it up for that need nothing, but enjoying everything, particularly as it relates to business. So this is what he said. I want to be the guy who is successful, peaceful, happy, enjoying life, blissful, meditative, spiritual, successful, and as healthy as I can be and famous and rich and not give a damn about any of it. If I lose it all tomorrow, I still want to be happy. That's it. That's where I want to be. I'll just make that decision because somebody has to be that person and it might as well be me. Thanks for hanging with us today. For those of you who recognize the power of a strategic partnership, you can get a short, impactful, and timely email from us every Thursday that'll be your guide for how to achieve more together. The Inner Circle is for founders, leaders, entrepreneurs, and their chiefs of staff, executive assistants, and right-hand partners who want to learn how to cast a vision, navigate change, lead together, build impactful businesses, and just get shit done. If you're interested, go to founderenforcemultiplier.com/innercircle to sign up.